shot to Muzzin, trying to center it and couldn't get it through that crowd in front. Perry comes back the other way for Tampa Bay. Centering pass for Maroon. He scores! Pat Maroon, the big rig, opens the scoring for the Lightning, and it's 1-0 Tampa Bay.
I always love when Pat Maroon scores. That's the call from Dave Randorf, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I always love it when Pat Maroon scores a goal. I always love it when players like Pat Maroon scores a goal, because it always seems as if he's surprised himself. A, he's ecstatic. He's happy. Obviously, that gave the Tampa Bay Lightning the one-goal lead, 1-0 last night against the Maple Leafs. But it just seems that he's so impressed and maybe surprised at himself for scoring a goal. We are standing by for Dave Randorf, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, to talk about a couple of things. One, the Tampa Bay Lightning, tough loss last night, but man, was Vasilevsky great in between the pipes. And two, and I just got this text from Joey Kenward, and we wonder if Dorf would have been at this game. Today is, and Kenward tweeted this as well, today's the 30th anniversary of Pavel Bure's NHL debut with the Vancouver Canucks. Ian McIntyre, credit to him, in his post-game write-up, referred to Bure as the quote-unquote Russian Rocket. Now, Joey thinks that, and I'm guessing, that Randorf would have been working for Sports Page at the time and might have been at that game. So we'll throw a dart, if we can get Dave on, and see if that's true. 30 years ago. Anybody else feel old right now? The debut of Pavel Bure with the Vancouver Canucks? If, by the way, you quick plug here for one of the properties I'm involved in and with, if you haven't seen the Hey Berkey that Brian and I did, along with audio engineer and storyboard editor Emil Dalich and Niels Britz, our animator out of Winnipeg, if you haven't seen the Pavel Bure story of how they got him to Vancouver, check it out. It's a really good one. You can find that one on YouTube. So we'll talk to Dave about Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll talk to him about the 30-year anniversary of the debut of the Russian Rocket, one of my favorite, and I suspect yours as well, players ever. One of the things about Bure that I think always impressed people is how at top speed he could shoot off any foot. It didn't matter. Like, the goaltenders would always have, you know, up until that point, an advantage because you knew where the feet were going to be when the player shot, and so you could cheat a little bit and set yourself. Bure at top speed could shoot off of either foot. A, he was quick. B, his shot was just so deadly accurate. And everything he did was sudden. Sure, he was fast. And when he gathered steam, look out. Through the neutral zone, gathering it up, he was a force. But man, oh man, everything he did wasn't just quick, it was sudden. That was one of the things that was most impressive about Pavel Bure. And I remember the first time seeing that line. Bure with McGillney and Fedorov. Good Lord. Think about that for a second. So always one of the great things about watching the World Juniors, or, you know, watching the Ivan Hlinka, you know, these lines that are all-star teams that, you know, you think about years later and you say, wow, these three elite level players all played on the same line when they were kids. Standing by for Dave Randorf. A couple of things coming out of last night as well. Oh, by the way, tonight, real nice moment. The Edmonton Oilers tonight will face off against the New York Rangers. And listen, we all know how the Oilers are playing right now. This is a team that's flying high, one of the top teams in the NHL. I mean, Carolina's killing it. Florida's killing it as well. And so are the Oilers, just playing some fantastic hockey right now. Tonight, they'll face off against the New York Rangers. That one you can watch on Sportsnet West. And number four goes to the rafters as the Edmonton Oilers retire Kevin Lowe's number. A couple of things here. One, I still maintain that the defensive defenseman in the NHL has always been undervalued. You see that from rink to rink, from franchise to franchise, and most specifically, you see that in the Hockey Hall of Fame, where all different kinds of players get elected, but everybody has a hard time with the defensive defenseman. Sure, your Rod Langways are going to go in, but there aren't a whole lot of obvious ones after that. I would make the case personally for Adam Foote. I've mentioned that before, that I think Foote should be in. That's one of the reasons why I thought it was good that, Kevin Lowe went in, because he was never going to put up stats like Paul Coffey. He was never that type of defenseman. But as far as being a tough, he was tough, man. Real tough stay-at-home guy. Kevin Lowe was an exceptional defenseman. Was glad to see him go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Be really happy to watch his number go to the rafters tonight, number four. But, like, just think about it for 1 second. Take a couple of moments out of your day today if you're interested in things like this as a little thought exercise. Think about all of the defensive defensemen that have gone into the Hockey Hall of Fame. There aren't many. You know, the world just lost one a couple of weeks ago when Leo Boivin passed away. Leo Boivin, one of the best and cleanest hitters the game has ever seen. Frightening when you came down his side. And he wasn't that huge either. But he was very much a defensive defenseman. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. But there are plenty of others. You know, one of the things that I always like to include in my Norris ballot is someone like Jacob Slavin. Because he's not putting up huge points. He's not. He's not going to be Adam Fox. He's not going to be Cale Makar. But as far as having the nerve to play the defensive side of the puck, he's one of the best in the NHL. Maybe the best defensive defenseman in the game, period. Don't think it gets appreciated enough. So we'll be happy to watch that one. The New York Rangers facing off against the Oilers at Rogers Place. And before the game, number four goes to the rafters. Also tonight, the Chicago Blackhawks are taking on the Winnipeg Jets. Of particular note here, now that our attention is turned away from Jack Eichel, okay, now that we're no longer following where is Jack Eichel going, what's the surgery he's going to get, are they going to allow him to get the artificial disc replacement? No, they're holding tight to the spinal fusion. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Vegas? Is it going to be, we mentioned Carolina, is it going to be the Rangers, the Ducks, the Calgary Flames who end up getting Jack Eichel? Now that all of that is done, now that saga has been put to bed, you look around the NHL and you think, okay, who are all some other likely trade targets? And Vlad Tarasenko, we all know about the trade request, but he's played great. Now, is he playing great because he's happy to be there? Well, if you watch him score goals, you say to yourself, he seems pretty happy out there, hugging teammates, smiling. Vladimir Tarasenko, when's the last time you saw Vladimir Tarasenko smiling as much as he is these days? Is he actually happy to be there? Does he actually want to stay with the St. Louis Blues? Or has he been told, look, there's no marketplace for you right now. If you want to go, you need to make one. And Tarasenko is making one, should that trade request, and we believe it still, is in place. But the reason the Blackhawks game is interesting, for a couple of reasons, and namely, now that our attention is away from Jack Eichel, you wonder about other players who are on the block, and Dylan Strome, who has been in and out, out, finally in. Here's a showcase, and then scratch for a bunch of games. Not exactly a secret that the Chicago Blackhawks are looking to move Dylan Strome. He is in tonight for the Chicago Blackhawks as they face off against the Winnipeg Jets, one of five games on the board this evening. Mention the Oilers and the Rangers. The Preds take on the Vancouver Canucks. You can watch that one on Sportsnet Pacific at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern. The Coyotes and the Ducks. How do you not feel bad for everybody involved with the Arizona Coyotes? How do you not feel bad for every single player? Every single player on the Arizona Coyotes right now. And they're not even done yet. Like, they're not even done the trading. Like, right now, like, they may go down as one of the worst teams in the history of the game. Okay? It's bad. They haven't won a game. And you know the next move eventually is going to be to deal Phil Kessel. He's in the last year of his contract. You know that Phil Kessel is going. Like, they are open for business in Arizona. There's a lot of pain coming. And, man, Connor Timmins, who's done for the season, I feel for that guy. There's a really good defenseman there. I feel bad for that guy. How'd you like to be Jacob Chychrun right now on that team, where a lot of all of this is being built around the hulking shoulders, and they are hulking. The guy is jacked. A lot of it's being built around this, you know, 23-year-old defenseman. And 10 games in, he's dash 16. Now, I don't place a whole bunch of premium on plus minus. That story is well told. It's a lot to do with the shooting percentage of everybody else on the ice around you, but that's a tough one. And this guy has, as we were talking to Elliot about, I think yesterday, aspirations for the Olympic team. I guess maybe one bright spot you look at, the Vemelka kid, the goaltender, has had a good start, a good 8 games for Arizona. But after that, find me a good story. This is going to be a long, painful season for Arizona. Tonight, they'll face off against the Anaheim Ducks. The New Jersey Devils are also taking on the Los Angeles Kings this evening. So it's a 5-game night around the NHL. And a couple of intriguing ones there. Let's bring our producer, Matt Marchese, into this conversation. As we're trying to hunt down Dave Randorf, who, by the way, we have had booked for the last... Full transparency here, Matty. We've booked Dorf the last couple of days and have had to bump him.
Because he's bumped us today.
I know. I think, you know, and I wouldn't blame him. Because we bumped him 2 days in a row because of, you know, Eichel situation and various other complications. So... If he's doing it right back to us, good on you, Dorf.
We're okay with it.
I can respect that. I can respect that.
So
what do you got going on, Matty?
I got some info for you. So you're talking about defensive defensemen in the Hall of Fame. So I've got a few, but there is a caveat to all this. So I'll give you the names. Butch Bouchard.
Yep.
Alan Stanley probably falls into that category.
You know what Alan Stanley was? Hang on. You know what Alan Stanley was great at?
Face-offs.
Face-offs. Know, like Ray Bourque probably. I mean, Ray Bourque used to take draws for the Bruins too, but Alan Stanley. There were a lot of people at that time that believed that defensemen taking the draw in the defensive zone allows everybody else to line up in a shrewder way. And Alan Stanley was probably as a matter of fact, you know, that highlight, the George Armstrong 3-1 goal in '67 that we all see.
Yeah, he takes the faceoff,
and I think it's Jean Beliveau that he beats too.
Oh, that.
It's a nice little sidebar. Nice little sidebar to that story. Anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
Tim Horton would be another one.
The bear hug.
Fern Flamin was inducted in 1990. Was probably the last defenseman before Kevin Lowe that was inducted into the Hall of Fame. That was a defensive defenseman. So it hasn't been one for a long time.
So if you talk to the old timers that played when Fern Flamin played. You know what they'll tell you? Everybody made a lot about Gordy and how tough he was. And there were other tough players. Lou Fontanato was tough. Ted Lindsay had his own brand of toughness as well. They'll tell you, Fern Flamin was the toughest of all of them. I guess Bill Juzda was pretty tough too in Chicago, but they'll tell you Fern Flamin was the toughest of all those guys. Nobody wanted to touch Fern Flamin.
I feel like I've heard that as well.
You know, it's like Orlin Kurtenbach. You know, even before he played in the NHL with Vancouver, was, you know, a Maple Leaf for a while. You know, he had some beauty fights, and he was one of those guys that you look at and you say, well, he's only got 60 penalty minutes. How tough can he be? Yeah, no one wanted to touch him. Kurtenbach was that guy. Still, for my money, one of the toughest ever in the game. Fern Flamin is right in that convo too.
So it's funny that you mentioned that.
Going old school today on me, Maddie. This is good. Yeah. I like this. I never expected to talk about Fern Flamin today on the radio, but here we are.
I don't think anybody did. It's funny that you mentioned the quiet, tough guy. So I played with a guy growing up that was super skilled, was a really good player, probably could have gone a lot further than he did, but just didn't really care too much. But one of those guys, so unassuming, that because people thought he was a skill guy, that they would challenge him, and I literally saw him beat the crap out of 4 or 5 guys, and word got around the league, and they went, not fighting that guy. Is there a guy that you can think of like that in today's game that you're like, he's really quiet, but man, I wouldn't want to tangle with him.
Really quiet, but I wouldn't want to tangle with him. I mean, Chara was kind of that guy. You always knew.
Don't fight him.
you always knew. Well, I mean, that's a point. That's an interesting one, Matty, because that's the point that Dick Irvin used to always make. And whenever I would talk about, you know, old-timey hockey with Dick, he would always go out of his way to make the point. He's like, you know, Jeff, there was once upon a time in this league where the best players were also the toughest players. Yeah. Like, sure, there was, you know, some guys, you know, maybe some fringe guys that just happened to be tougher, or, you know, call-ups. But, you know, by and large, whether it was, you know, Gordie Howe or Rocket Richard, by the way, Jean Béliveau was tougher than people give him credit for as well. He was a big, tough dude. I'll throw one at you, Matt, as we go to break here. I think it was 2008. Darcy Hordichuk, okay, only had 60 minutes in penalties that season. And you know what's notable about that one? Matty Marchese?
They were all fighting majors.
All fighting majors.
Yeah.
12 fights. The perfect season for a fighter. There's only been one. Darcy Hordichuk. I think it was 2008. All right, we'll step away. Going to come back and talk to Kelly McCrimmon, Vegas Golden Knights general manager. Also, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Ian Mendez about Brady Tkachuk, who today became the 10th captain in Ottawa Senators franchise history. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. We talked about Fern Flamin today. What a day this is. Rick Jenneret is a treasure, calling another great Jack Eichel highlights, then a member of the Buffalo Sabres, now a member of the Vegas Golden Knights, and the man who brought him to Vegas is joining me now on the Jeff Merrick Show. He is Kelly McCrimmon, the general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, who joins me on the show. Kelly, good afternoon. Thank you so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is mine. First of all, congratulations. I know deals like this are never easy. This one took a lot of time. We had Pat Brisson on the program yesterday, and he talked about how this deal was, you know, it was, you know, it would get really hot and then it would cool off and it was there and then it would go away. And 2 weeks ago, you know, he said, we thought there was going to be a deal. That went away. Last Friday and Saturday, we thought there was going to be a deal, and then that went away. How would you, because listen, you made a lot of deals, whether it's NHL or back when you were in the Western Hockey League with the Wheat Kings, how would you describe this entire process, or as some would describe it, Kelly, ordeal with getting Jack Eichel to Vegas?
Well, there were some complexities with the health situation, and then just the discussions that were held with Pat Brisson, and you know he relaying you know the information from the medical side, and then including our own medical team. So that was a you know another layer to this, and then I guess just you know the magnitude of the trade, the quality of the player, you know really you know made it challenging to get it just right in terms of what they were going to be satisfied with as a return and in terms of what we could do with our team. So to Pat's point, there was sure a period of time where you know every day I would get up and I would say, geez, I think today's the day it's going to happen, and it took quite a while to get it completed.
I'm trying to figure out a way to ask you this, and I'll just come out and ask it. Were the players a bigger battle, or were the picks? I'm curious how something like this comes together, because deals like this are a Rubik's Cube, and it takes a while, and you know sometimes discussions go certain routes. Were the biggest battles over players, or were the biggest battles over picks?
Well, it all intertwines, Jeff. I think you kind of, in general terms, have a bargaining mix when you're making a trade, and there's different things that are discussed, and it ties together. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't share probably that level of detail, but it wasn't. I wouldn't say there was one any more than the other. I mean, there's discussion about salary retention. There's discussion about draft picks. There's discussion about prospects. There's discussion about Jack's health. There's discussion about, you know, where the surgery will be, what the surgery will be, what the rehab time will be, what the likelihood is of a full recovery. So those are more the things that I think made it challenging than what you're asking me.
How quickly, let me phrase it a different way. How much did you know, if anything, about artificial disc replacement before it became an issue with Jack Eichel? And then how quickly, Kelly, did you start to study about what ADR was all about?
Well, it's important to know what you don't know, Jeff. So I know more about ADR than I did a month ago or 6 weeks ago. But certainly, I'm deferring to the experts. There's, you know, different kinds of discs, different materials that they're made of, and it's you know, obviously very intricate and very, you know, very important based on you know, how serious an injury this is. But I think in general terms, what we were comfortable with was that Jack, Pat Brisson, their medical team were doing what they felt was in Jack's best interest. There's no reason why they wouldn't be. They've got, you know, the experts in the field with, you know, the experience, the expertise to provide good guidance to perform the surgery if that's the way that it goes. So, you know, we were deferring to them, I guess, quite frankly, just trusting that they had arrived at this decision because they felt it was the best way to do it. I think that the uncertainty is it's never been performed on an NHL player before. Yep. And, you know, that's, I think, a concern for some people. But it is not an uncommon surgery for athletes of other sports. And, you know, the expectation is that that this will go well. There's some risk, for sure, for the player and for our team. But I think the expectation from everybody involved is that this is a surgery that will be performed successfully, and Jack will rehab to a full recovery.
Kelly McCrimmon, Golden Knights general manager, with me here this afternoon. There is a belief around the league that when a superstar player becomes available, the Vegas Golden Knights investigate seriously. At what point, Kelly, did you and your group say, this is someone that we should do a little bit more than just kicking tires on?
Yeah, I think I spoke to this yesterday, Jeff. I think that narrative's been stretched a little bit. There's lots of players that are available that we don't have interest in for one reason or another: fit, salary, you know, the makeup of our own team, you know, different things. And yet, you know, I guess Mark Stone is a player that we identified would sure be a guy, if he was available, we wanted to go after, so we did. I think with, you know, Alex Petrangelo, it was a real strong belief that Stanley Cup champions need a defenseman like that. Certainly enhances your chances of success at playoff time. So that was a player that we aggressively pursued as a free agent, had to make corresponding moves to make that fit. And then I guess with you know, with Jack Eichel, you know, he's one of the top centers in the National Hockey League. When you look at that elite level of centermen, you know, I mentioned some of those names yesterday with different people around the NHL. And, you know, in our own conference, you've got your Kopitars, your McDavids, your McKinnons. You know, you go to the East, you've got the Points, the Barzells, the Barkovs, the Crosbys, the Malkins, you know, Nick Backstrom. So those are the guys that that to me are so key to their team. And I just think you improve your chances if you have an elite centerman like that on your team. It was you know, an area where I think our team could be better. We like our centers. We weren't in the market for a centerman. We hadn't talked with any other teams about a center. But then Jack Eichel was available, and for me, that's where it all changes. I think you've got to, at least my opinion is, you've got to do your due diligence to see if there is a fit. Oftentimes, there's not. In this particular case, we were able to get it done. But I think the suggestion that every time a player comes for trade, we're in on it, I don't think is quite accurate.
I say it in a flattering way, though, Kelly. Like, there, I say it in a way that, when I think about Vegas, I think about bold moves. And I think about where a lot of teams might say, oh, you know what, we can't make that fit. Let's not even entertain the idea. It seems as if your team says, if we're interested, we can find a way to make things work. That was my only point in how I couched it. Like, there's a boldness that we see from Vegas that we don't necessarily see from other teams.
Yeah, and that's fair, Jeff. I think that, I guess I'm only trying to make the point that it's not just, every week we have a meeting to see who we should go after. There's players that, that we now have a few of that, ordinarily don't move from team to team. So there's been a handful of situations, even less than a handful of situations, where that type of player was available and we were aggressive, and it leads to making a lot of hard decisions. And, I've said different times, it would be nice to just do what's easy and sit on your hands, but we're trying to position our team to be successful. So if you, are driven by that, and that's the objective of the organization, I think that you have to look at these things. And again, they don't all work out. Might not be a fit between a seller and a buyer, and you move on. But in this particular situation, we were able to get the deal completed, and I think it fills a really big need for our team.
It seemed as if your team last night felt that Jack Eichel was walking through the door tomorrow, the way they came out and performed against the Ottawa Senators. That was an impressive performance, and we're all aware of the issue with the available players right now for the Vegas Golden Knights. What's been the feedback from the players, when it became obvious that Jack Eichel was going to become a member of the Vegas Golden Knights, and everyone stayed up until the wee hours and then it became official the next day? How do the players feel about this one? Because they came out last night like Eichel's walking through that door any minute now.
Well, I think that our core players know how good a player he is, and it I think really helps us match up with teams in the Western Conference. So our guys want to win, so they appreciate that we're doing what we can to help that process. I made the comment yesterday, there's players in our team that have been on teams where the older players or the top players were getting traded away. Well, this is exciting for a player. At the same time, everyone feels bad for Alex Tuch, who was a really good member of our team for our entire time in the National Hockey League, and Peyton Krebs, I think, had really earned the respect of our team as well. NHL players don't care about draft picks. That's a given. Yep. Because that's just too far down the road for how they look at the world. So, I think that they really think we made our team better. Obviously, it's what's interesting is usually that that player arrives immediately, and you get a sense as to what type of impact it's going to have on your team, where, of course, in this situation, it's going to be quite a bit down the road here still.
You mentioned draft picks there, Kelly, and when this deal happened, one of my first thoughts went to Scott Luce, and I thought, okay, I wonder if this is a case where, Kelly McCrimmon says to Scott, hey, Scott, sorry, I'm taking a couple more picks out of your chamber here. Or do you say, hey, Scott, thanks for finding a guy in the draft that we helped turn into Jack Eichel? How do you talk to Scott Luce about this one?
Well, it's more the latter. We've got an unbelievable amateur staff with Bob Lowe's and Scott and their staff. And, I'm from junior hockey. I love scouting. I respect tremendously the work that that those people do, and to trade a first round draft choice or to trade a player that they've drafted in the first round, I don't take lightly. So the work that they've done has allowed us to convert some of their picks into real good players. If you look at, you know, Eric Branstrom being the key piece of the Mark Stone deal, you look at Nick Suzuki being the key piece of the Max Pacioretty deal, and then again here just yesterday with Peyton, you know, that's a real compliment to the work that Bobby Scott and their guys did. So they're team players, and they want to win. They trust our judgment. We do things very collaboratively when we make a move. There's no unilateral decisions made. It's a process where we involve a lot of people. And I think they trust what we're doing, and we know they're still going to find us players. So that's where we're fortunate, is to have the quality of staff that we do there.
Yesterday was a very happy day. Happy for Jack Eichel. He can finally get the surgery that he's needed for quite some time now. And happy for you, Kelly, and the Vegas Golden Knights. You got an elite-level player, and when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the game. Best of luck even before Jack Eichel joins the Vegas Golden Knights. Thanks so much for joining me today, Kelly. Always appreciated.
Yes, thanks, Jeff. Anytime.
There he is, Kelly McCrimmon, Vegas Golden Knights general manager, who made the big splash yesterday, Matt Marchese, our producer, in picking up Jack Eichel. And it wasn't cheap. There's picks. There's legit NHLers. There's first-round draft picks that are right now playing in Rochester, and that's where they're deciding to start Peyton Krebs, which I think is a good move by the Buffalo Sabres. Looks like they're going to double shift them at center starting tonight and put them around veteran players. Spoke to someone there. He's not going to be playing. I don't think he's going to be playing with Jack Quinn or J.J. Paterka. They're going to surround him with more veteran guys to start. No point in rushing this guy, even though he was playing in the NHL. No point in rushing him into the Buffalo Sabres situation right now. What are you saying about this one, Matty Marchese?
Well, we kind of touched on it a bit yesterday, but I really do feel like if Jack Eichel gets back to the Jack Eichel that we've seen, I think that Vegas runs away with this deal. Because when we talked about this Vegas team last season, what were they missing? And what have they been missing for a couple of seasons? It's the
first
top line
center. First line center.
And not only are they getting a top line center, but healthy, maybe one of the 5 to 8 best players in the world. So it feels like a small price to pay. But yes, I understand that there is risk. But man, I was watching some Jack Eichel highlights this morning, and I kind of had a grin across my face where I was like, man, I can't wait to see Jack Eichel play on the Vegas Golden Knights.
I miss it.
Like, that's going to be fun.
You know what I miss seeing in Jack Eichel? I miss seeing a player, because no one skates like Jack Eichel. Colby Armstrong, oh, he always makes me laugh. Whenever we'd watch a Sabres game together and Eichel would be doing something, he'd say, oh, this guy skates like he's a Raptor. Like, he's got that straight back. It's almost like an old school, like you're watching, you know, Frank Mahovlich come down the wing. He's got the straight back, you know, chin is up, and you know, the core is tight, and the legs are moving. I was like, it's like watching a Raptor run. It's like nobody's, and he's powerful. Every stride is so flipping powerful with Jack Eichel. The point that I was making yesterday, I'll stick with it. I think that we still forget how good Jack Eichel is. He was on a bad Buffalo Sabres team. The injury has put him out of sight, out of mind. When this guy's healthy, he's just flat out one of the best players in the game. I know that Kevin Adams went into this one and said, look, I got to make the best possible deal that I can. And I know that nobody wanted the Eichel camp to file a grievance. Nobody wanted to go down that road. Jack Eichel desperately needs this surgery. He will get it probably next week. It just seemed like it had reached its logical conclusion, and it couldn't go any further. And Kevin Adams just said, look, the best possible deal that I have out there is from Vegas. That's the one I'm going to go for. And I'm sure I'm sure Kevin Adams tried to, massage McCrimmon on picks. or who the player was. And I know that Buffalo really keyed in on Peyton Krebs from, as I understand it, pretty much day one. But that was the best that was out there right now for Jack Eichel. I just don't think we should lose sight of how great a player he is. But having said that, I don't expect Jack Eichel, when he returns to the NHL, if it is this season, and you never know with a surgery like this. Again, to the previous point, no NHLer has undergone surgery like this before. There have been hockey players, but not NHLers. The demands of an NHLer are that much greater, as we all know, than in any other league, at any other level. I would still temper expectations. I know the first couple of shifts, he's going to be gangbusters, and they're going to go into it, talking about managing minutes, and he's going to look over at his coach and go, hey, I feel fine. Send me back out there. You know what's going to happen, right, Maddie?
Oh, yeah.
But I still think we should temper our expectations about Eichel. To me, we're not going to know how good Jack Eichel still is until next season. Having said that, I'll still take Jack Eichel at 75%.
I'd take him over 80% of the league at 75%.
A lot of people, right? So
yeah.
Listen,
yeah,
good on Vegas, and for the Buffalo Sabres, like, I know a lot of fans are down on, you know, the return they got, but that's the deal. Those are the deals that were out there, and it's not as if Kevin Adams rushed into anything. Like, that's the one thing the can't accuse Kevin Adams of. He didn't rush into anything. It's like he didn't rush into the Ristolainen trade. He didn't rush into the Eichel deal. If anything, he was criticized for doing, you know, for doing the opposite, for taking too long. But that's, I think that Kevin Adams was thorough and looked all around the league to try to canvas to find the best possible offer, and Vegas's offer was the best one.
I mean, at this point, Jeff, he like you said, he took so long. There wasn't going to be another better deal on the table that was just going to come out of nowhere. Because especially the way the cap,
unless it was a big injury. Unless it was a big injury. That's the only caveat there, though, Maddie.
And you can't bank on
you
that.
Can't wait. Like, no, you can't wait. Really, well, no,
this was the best possible deal. Before we break, do you want to get to a couple of clips here?
Oh yeah, yeah. What do we got?
We'll talk
what
about Friedge. So yeah, let's get the first one, Lance. This is Eichel talking about when he decided to ask for a trade.
I remember when you were drafted. This is one of the greatest markets in the NHL. It should have worked.
Yeah.
Where did it go sideways?
You know, I was hearing a lot of things that we were going to try and, try and do a rebuild. Or so, you know, I went to the team and just said I wasn't really happy with the idea of that, and that if that's the route they wanted to take, that that maybe it would be better to move me. And obviously that didn't go over well. I wanted to just stand up for what I believed in more than anything. And there was disagreements, and it's understood, but I think we finally got past that.
You know, the interesting point about that, and I'm not surprised that Elliot got to that question early talking to Jack Eichel. That was Jack Eichel's house yesterday that he went to. I asked Elliot on the opening of the podcast, if you walked into Jack Eichel's house, could you tell he's a hockey player? And he said no. But that rumor had been out there before, like going into the season. Has Jack Eichel asked for a trade? And so that was the first time that Eichel confirmed it by saying, look, if it's going to be one of those situations where we're not chasing wins and we're going to go through another rebuild, use me as a piece to move that along. At this point in my career, I don't want to be part of that. It does something for my career. So that was some good confirmation at that point. Do you got another one?
I do have another one. This is a clip of Jack Eichel talking about where he thought he might end up.
Was there anywhere else you thought you were going to be traded to? Was there any point where you said, okay, I'm going to be a blank?
You know, for a while I thought, maybe I was going to Minnesota. And then, there was even a small, there was a short time where I was like, wow, I really think it's a possibility. I'm going to go to Colorado. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like it could have gotten done. You know, I'm sure a lot of guys in the league are sick of hearing about this story. And listen, nobody's more sick of this story than me. Like, there's nothing I want more than for this to just go away. And I just can't wait to be a hockey player again. And I can't say enough good things about the Vegas Golden Knights for giving me this opportunity. And, you know, I owe a lot to them right now, and I just can't wait to get to work.
Okay, a few things there. One, you can watch this interview at our YouTube channel. This was on Hockey Central last night, and you'll see a lot more of it tomorrow on Hockey Night in Canada. It's a really good interview, and Jack is, A, he's in a good mood because the trade has just been made, so he's a happy guy. I'm not sure what the attitude would have been like, or the interview would have been like if Jack Eichel was still sitting there saying, I'm still a Buffalo Sabre. But that is interesting because we had heard Minnesota, obviously, and that was going to be a tricky one for Bill Guerin to pull off, considering the salary cap ramifications of buying out Suter and Parise specifically in years 2 and 3 and 4 of those buyouts. But I think we made the point, Maddie, was it yesterday or the day before? Days all run together these days. That Colorado's in on so many things and so many players that we shouldn't be shocked, even though they're an elite level team, a team that people are still maintaining or, you know, one of the Stanley Cup favorites. By the way, that game against the Blue Jackets, even though they lost it the other day, that was a fast paced game, man. Whew. Colorado's in and around everybody. Panarin was a short-term big money offer. They were in on Taylor Hall. They were in on Seth Jones, who pretty much, without saying so, pretty much confirmed that to me and Elliot when we sat down with him last month or 2 months ago. Again, time. What does it mean right now? They've been in on a lot of the biggies. You know, big players available. You know, I joked with Kelly McCrimmon about that a couple of seconds ago. And, you know, we could probably say the same thing about the Colorado Avalanche. The only problem is, you know, they haven't been able to land the plane on any of these humongous deals. But Colorado's in and around everything, Maddie. That shouldn't surprise us. Although, I'll tell you what, just the thoughts, like you're listening to this right now, think about McKinnon and Eichel 1-2 up the gut in the Western Conference.
That's a nightmare, Jeff. Like, really, it's like, oh, look, we have Nathan McKinnon that we have to deal with our top unit. Oh, no, we have Jack Eichel to deal with our second unit. Oh, great. Wonderful.
Wow.
Wow. That would be scary. But, you know, with Colorado, Joe Sakic is obviously not shy about improving his hockey team. Like, there's no question about that. And
yep.
There's also this willingness, it feels like that they're not, the window is closing, but it's going to get a little bit tougher to build a roster a certain way in Colorado because they got Nathan McKinnon at a really good number. They had Landeskog at a really good number before they shelled out a bunch of cash. Like that, when guys get paid, it gets harder to win. It's like the same, the story in the NFL is always you have to try and win with a quarterback on a rookie contract because they demand so much money on their second deal. And that happens in the NHL. When your stars get paid, it becomes a lot harder to win. Aside from Tampa Bay, because, you know, they bend the rules however they like. But having said that, Colorado is gonna, they need to make a real push in the next couple seasons here. And well, listen, it's a lot of time.
Yeah, salary's already cost them a goaltender, right? I mean, they have the big ticket on the horizon with Nathan McKinnon. So they get him one more year. So next season you have him at 6.3. After that, it's payday time. And they've got Landeskog at 7. They've got Rantanen at 9.25. Let's not forget they have Cale Makar in at 9. And this is a situation where the salary cap is not going to grow by leaps and bounds. As a matter of fact, you know, you talk to various managers around the league and they'll tell you, like, I was talking to one the other day. I'm like, how much are you off? And he said 25%. Like, oh, God, that's a killer. I know they're expecting full buildings everywhere, but, you know, some of the headlines have been sellout streaks are ending. You have a team like the Maple Leafs that are advertising ticket packages. When in your life have you, Matt, you heard the Maple Leafs advertising ticket packages? Never.
Never once.
So you're looking at a flat cap, and you're right. Like, there are some players on really good deals. Like, I still consider the Cale Makar deal based on – how he performs to be a good deal. I think the Samuel Girard deal is a good deal. Right now, Nathan MacKinnon, though, that is a blessing. And we've talked about that plenty of times, even though at the time that was considered a huge contract, but that was when the salary cap was growing and all of a sudden his contract, Johnny Gaudreau's contract, looked very reasonable. But you're going to start to, it's already cost him a goaltender, Philip Grubauer. All of a sudden, you need to start paying some guys. You got one more year of MacKinnon. That's going to cost you some players. You better start winning. You know, I know all the jokes about the Maple Leafs in the first round, they all apply, and that is low-hanging fruit. Yeah, but you know what, Jeff? Low-hanging fruit, still nutritious. You can say the same thing about the Colorado Avalanche and the second round. It's a big season for the Avs, a big season for Joe Sakic. And yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if, once again, come trade deadline time, Matty, this guy's all around whoever the biggest player is or the biggest players.
It's very quiet.
That's always been the way, you know, even previous to Joe Sakic. Pierre Lacroix was exactly the same way. Everything was done quietly. Nothing got out. You hated it because nothing got out. We can respect it. And, yeah. You know, that's who Joe Sakic learned from. Anyway, great stuff, Matty. We're going to hit a pause here on the program. Come back with Ian Mendez from The Athletic, covers the Ottawa Senators. New captain is in town, the guy with the new contract, and that is Brady Tkachuk. Ian Mendez weighs in moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Down low, Tkachuk tipped it wide on a feed from Zub. Puck loose along the wall. Petrangelo had it knocked away. Now Leonard swats it to the far side. Zub walks it to the middle. Wrist shot, score! Brady Tkachuk on the deflection in front on the long range shot from Artem Zub. And Brady Tkachuk has made it a 3-1 game.
That's Captain Tkachuk to you. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. Please be joined now by a longtime colleague and good friend. And listen, a razor-sharp mind when it comes to hockey and specifically the Ottawa Senators. He is the great Ian Mendez, and he joins me now. Ian, how are you today, sir?
Oh, wow, what an intro. I got some big shoes to fill here.
Well, that's just how you texted it to me. That's how you wanted to be introduced, right?
Yes,
did I read that okay? Did I read that all right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm going to send you that. I'll e-transfer you the $20 too.
Yeah, to S Claus, 1234 Shangri-La Lane, CO, yeah. The North Pole. So, I mean, listen, this was a poorly kept secret, but today was the day. It all became official. Brady Tkachuk, the 10th captain in Ottawa Senators history. Is this the right choice? And if so, why?
You know what, Jeff? It is the right choice, and really, it was a two horse race the whole time. It was either going to be Brady Tkachuk or Thomas Chabot, and I have been adamant on this point. They couldn't have made a wrong decision either way. If we were having a discussion today, and Thomas Chabot was the guy that was named captain, I would have been totally fine with it. I think that Thomas is very easygoing. He's bilingual, which I think matters in a market like Ottawa. I think he's a great representative of what they're trying to do. So if he was the guy, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. But it just felt like Tkachuk was the more natural leader in terms of, like, he's more of a wear the heart on the sleeve. He's the engine that kind of drives the whole thing. DJ Smith will always tell you on a night where let's say Ottawa kind of guts out a 3-2 win and they come back, he'll often say, you know, Brady Tkachuk led us in the battle tonight. He dragged us in the battle. And he has that. He's a natural leader. And I know you've had him on your shows in the past. And I know, well, I know you certainly had his brother on your podcast.
that was interesting.
Hey, listen, you gave us some great information, great material in Ottawa for a couple of days. But he's just a natural leader. And I think when you have those characteristics, and now you've got the long-term deal, you want to be there. It was a slam dunk, and it was a good day for the franchise today.
You know, I am curious about what you said there about DJ Smith specifically, because you look at Brady Tkachuk and you say, and listen, you know DJ Smith, like, you look at Brady Tkachuk and you watch how he plays, like, that's a DJ Smith type player. There would be other coaches in the NHL that would, you know, lean towards more what, you know, Thomas Chabot, you know, brings to the table and brings to a team. How much of this naming of Brady Tkachuk as the captain has to do with what DJ Smith wants here? Like, we know that, like, listen, they're both represented by the same group, as we all know, and, you know, there's an affinity there. DJ Smith is a big fan of Brady Tkachuk. And that's certainly his style of player. How much of this is just, you know what? Brady wanted us to do DJ. We did the DJ Smith contract, got that one out of the way. We did the Brady Tkachuk deal. Now this is the icing on the cake, or the ribbon around the present here.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot of merit to that. I think Brady Tkachuk, I think in the summer, made it very clear he wanted to see some stability around this organization, right? And so they locked up the coach that he likes in DJ Smith, and I think that's huge. And then obviously in turn, they turned around and gave Brady a 7-year contract. The one thing I'll say is that it was really interesting. DJ Smith today said, I want people to understand, though, I'm going to view Thomas Chabot as a co-captain. I'm going to be giving him equal responsibility. I'm going to be giving him all sorts of, you know, and you remember way back in the day, Jeff, remember the Habs? I think it was like the 89-90 season. And they had co-captains. It was Chris Chelios and Guy Carboneau. And they split the
teams have done it. Oh, yeah, teams have done it.
Yeah.
Teams have done it.
The Minnesota Wild, I think, had one year where they just rotated it around. Like, so we've seen that. And there was part of me that wondered, would they go down this road of co-captain? But I think you're right in terms of, like, when you listen to Trent Mann, who is the chief amateur scout of the Ottawa Senators, they talk about the team that they're trying to draft and what they're trying to build. And then you listen to DJ Smith, you listen to Pierre Dorion. What they're trying to build is this kind of nasty, physical, not fun to play against team that also has some skill. Like, we can't forget that. And Brady Tkachuk's got a ton of skill. So if you were to pick the one guy who exemplifies or personifies exactly what they want the face of this franchise to be, it would be number 7. It would be Brady Tkachuk. So again, I think it's a natural selection. I think the fans really like this one. I know the players will like it. But like I said, I think it's important that they made sure they went out of their way to talk about Thomas Chabot today. And I'd like to think that before they went public with this announcement, that they would have sat down with Thomas and said, look, you were this close. And it was really close. We want you to be part of this leadership team. And that, as long as it was done with that degree of transparency, Jeff, then I don't think there'll be, you know, any issues there.
With Ian Mendez from The Athletic here on the Merrick Show, that is interesting. And I would expect that they would have had that conversation with Thomas Chabot. You mentioned the fans there as well. Was there, you know, I'm always, whenever you have a long contract saga and drama, it gets emotional at times. It can get personal. But I'm curious, from the Ottawa Senators fans' point of view, I mean, you're right there with the thermometer plugged in. How did they feel about Brady Tkachuk leading up until that fateful day where he signed, showed up at the rink and did the little dance and everything? Where were Sens fans at on Brady Tkachuk not too long ago?
You know, it's funny because I bet you there's a bunch of people either that day when he signed the 7-year deal or today that are going back in their histories and deleting the, this guy can't be the captain, because, and you know, and it's funny, and a lot of it stems from the conversation that you and Elliot had with Matthew Tkachuk, where it people were like, if this guy is just in it for the money, he's not a leader, and it's, you know, it turned into a circus. And then all of a sudden, some people started to turn on Brady Tkachuk, which I never thought in a million years would happen. But again, like you said, I think that was just a function of frustration of, oh no, here we go again with a prolonged contract dispute we've been through the story in Ottawa, you know, for many years. So it was just that type of frustration that boiled to the forefront. So there was absolutely some palpable anger in the marketplace when we got to September, when we got to early October, and he wasn't signed. And for sure, there were some people that sided with management that felt like maybe this guy's just being greedy. But at the end of the day, it was such a reasonable contract. Like, I look at that and I'm like, that's just a fair deal. It's a great cap hit number. It's a great term. It felt like it's win-win for everybody. You're not overpaying him by that much. I think, honestly, at the end of the day, cooler heads have prevailed. And I think that's why there was a little bit of a delay too, Jeff, in naming him the captain. I did think that at times maybe the negotiations probably got a little emotional on both sides, and it was good. Take a little bit of a cooling period, make sure this is the right decision, make sure everyone's in the right headspace, and I think they did that today.
Hang on. The Ian Mendez that I know, the one that loves show business, would have loved if just very quietly in the first game he came out for warm-up with the C on. Come on, Ian. I know you, bud.
You know what I would have loved? You remember, and all the listeners would probably remember, the day they signed him, they flew him in, and he comes out in the kind of at a TV timeout. He does a little Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank, yeah.
He does a little shimmy. You know, if he came out wearing the captain C there, that yeah, I would have been all in on that.
That's good too. And you know, we can't forget, like, the one thing too, like, it's hard in this era where teams, you know, the best they can hope for is to put together pairs, to put together two. Like, there are some teams that have the luxury of having a line. We think of Boston, we think of Colorado, but it's rare. Generally, you're going to get pairs. But the Ottawa Senators now, all of a sudden, they have this luxury of having a legit number one line, one that you look at and you can say, this is going to be a number one line for the next, I don't know, five, six, seven, whatever years. And that's Tkachuk, Norris, and Batherson. For those listening that don't follow the Ottawa Senators closely, Norris is next. What type of negotiation do you think this one is going to be? Because Batherson's done. Tkachuk is done. We all know about Brady Tkachuk and Josh Norris, you know, going back to the U.S. development program. But how difficult do you think this deal is going to be for Pierre Dorion?
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one because he has elevated himself. When they traded for him, just to give the listeners some context here, when they traded and he was part of the Erik Karlsson deal,
yeah,
the feeling was he was a middle six forward. Yeah, maybe he's a third line guy. Maybe he's a second line guy. That was about it. He's come in, Jeff, and he's blown the doors off his plate. He's a legit number one center. And I don't mean number one like a McDavid or a Matthews. Like, I'm not like that. But I think he could be like in that, you know, the Scheifele kind of that tier of legitimate, you know, he's a legitimate number one centerman. And so as you look at comparables, I think of Nick Suzuki. And I think, you know, what Nick did, the 7 years and the 7.8, like if I'm the North camp at the end of the year, my numbers are going to look awfully similar to Nick Suzuki. And I'm going to be able to probably march into negotiations and say, look at the numbers, look at the comparables. It's pretty even. But I will say it's interesting. Pierre Dorion, the one thing he said on the day they signed Brady Tkachuk, we can't give everybody a long-term deals. We got to bridge some people. Like, that's just the nature of the beast. Remember Tampa? Tampa had to bridge Point. Tampa had to bridge.
They always do. They always do. Tampa does
they
it.
Find
Tampa
a way.
Does that.
Magically. So that's what may happen here. But boy, if Norris continues to perform, Jeff, and he's a 25 goal scorer, 60 points, how is he not going to get Suzuki money?
No, I know. Like, he's such a wonderful young player. And, you know, I say the same thing about Tim Stützle. Like, every game, every single game, Ian, and you're a lot closer to it than I am, but every game that I watch the Ottawa Senators, Stützle does something. And I'm not saying it's shift in, shift out, and there's, you know, there's a consistency factor, but he does something that you say, holy smokes, there's an elite level play. There's an elite level player here. Do you think that eventually, and I don't know when the time is going to be, putting aside contract talk, because that's an obvious one, but that one's coming up down the road. Do you think this guy is a center? And if so, when do they make that move? I mean, that's where he played, was comfortable playing in Germany. Is the plan for Stützle to play in the middle in Ottawa?
So we have asked this question, Jeff, so many times. And every time we get the answer, I think I asked it again in training camp this year, are you toying with the idea? And the answer always comes back, no. We're not. Like, he's played now 18 months as a winger. Like, he's we just feel like there's too much responsibility there. And I think, honestly, the thing that might have even nudged them towards that is the evolution of Shane Pinto. Like, Shane Pinto, who's out of the lineup right now, he's really become a legitimate, like, centerman in the National Hockey League. So if you've got Norris and Pinto there, maybe you're okay in the center ice position. So, but Stützle has no goals this year. But yet, if you watch the chances, if you had just showed people the highlights and showed them a bunch of rushes and be like, okay, you have to guess how many goals that guy has. You'd be like, I don't know, six, seven. You're like, no, he's got none. He's got no goals.
Honestly, when Stutzel's on the ice, if you just showed the rink from red line to red line, and you didn't have to put the puck over that red line thing, and you just showed from red line to red line Tim Stützle, you'd think this guy's already had like seven or eight goals. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been dominant. He just hasn't had the breaks. And that's where some people are saying, is it time to put him with Norris and Batherson. Maybe give him some better offensive support. But it is interesting that the debate about him being a centerman is brought up often in the in the marketplace, and it's often met with coolness from the organization.
Such a high skill player. So where do you identify as the biggest area of need then for the Ottawa Senators? I think, you know, the knee jerk might just to be, you know, they got a couple of defensemen on the horizon, Bernard Docker and Sanderson, but where do you look at right now and say these are the holes that Pierre Dorion needs to plug?
Like in the here and the now, in the right now today, they need some help on the back end. They've given up 15 goals this week in three games, and nobody's talking about the goaltending. The goaltending is not the problem. It's the defense beyond Thomas Chabot and Artem Zub.
So Gustafson was really good last night. Like, I'm watching this game, like, he's excellent. And then end of the night, they just got starched. But I got no problem with Gustafson last night.
Nope, and it's poor defensive zone coverage that's kind of, submarining them right now. So, like, I always go back to the summer, and the guy that I thought they should have got was Ryan Graves. Like, Colorado was up against it. They had to get rid of him. Like, that's exactly what they just need, that one guy. Because Jake Sanderson is going to come in here probably in the spring. He's going to play every night. He's going to be on this team, and he's going to be in the top four, and they're going to be off and running. They just need that one other guy. Like, who's going to play with him? Because they'd like to do Chabot and Zub, I think, in an ideal world. They need a partner for Sanderson. They just need that one guy to stabilize things. And I think if they do, Jeff, I'm not saying they're a playoff team this year, but I think next year you could talk me into them potentially being a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
You know, that is so fascinating what you just said about Ryan Graves. And here's why. DJ Smith coached against them at the Memorial Cup, the closing of the Colisée. His Oshawa Generals, Anthony Cirelli, scores a goal, the last goal ever scored at the Colisée. The year before, Graves was playing with Valdor in the London Memorial Cup. The next year, when it was at the Colisée that the Generals won, coached by DJ Smith, he played for the Quebec Ramparts for Philippe Boucher's squad. So it's not as if this is a foreign player to DJ Smith.
Right.
And he is someone. Like, you look at how Ryan Graves plays. We just talked about Brady Tkachuk being a DJ Smith type forward. I look at Ryan Graves and I'm like, DJ Smith would love this guy. Like, adore this guy. That's a really interesting name, Ian. That's a really interesting name.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of teams that probably are kicking themselves that, but to me, the expansion draft was the time to do it, right? That's when some teams were leveraged with the cap and the expansion draft. And now I don't feel that same pressure that some team is like, well, we got to trade a top four defenseman right now in the first week of November.
Before we let you go, right now it's a little bit of a skid here for the Ottawa Senators. Tough little stretch here for them. Going into this season, we kept hearing the rebuild is over, the rebuild is done, all the heavy lifting is over. Is my last question to you.
Oof. Well, you know what? Up until this week, I would have said, I think they're starting to take that step in the right direction. Because you know what, Jeff? Before this week, the games that they were losing, like, they were in them. Like, they blew a game against the Rangers that they were up 2-0 that should have won. They were in a game against the Caps back and forth. But they were in every game. And you're like, okay, this is what they promised. They said they were going to be competitive every night. Guess what? This week, it's like we took a time warp back to 2018 because Chicago dusted them 5-1. Last night they get dusted 5-1. Like, we were told that those days were done. And I agree. Like, every once in a while, you're going to lose a game 5-1. But when you lose two games 5-1 in the span of 4 days, and it's sandwiched with another game that you lost and you gave up five goals, some alarm bells are going to go off. So I think the idea that the darkest days are behind us might be a little bit premature, might be a little bit more pain here, but it still feels more optimistic around here. It really does. Like, it feels way better than it did in 2017, 18, 19. It feels like they're taking that step in the right direction. They just need to figure out how they can clean up their own act defensively. Yeah. They're not going to be a playoff team this year, but as long as they're competitive and they didn't get to like the 80-point plateau, I think most people would be happy in Ottawa.
Ian, I'm with you. Like, going into this season, whenever anyone asked me about the Ottawa Senators, I always said, here's the only question I have about the Sens. Are the kids getting better? That's it. That's all I want to know. Are the kids getting better? If the answer is yes, good season. That's it. I know players will tell you playoffs and we got to make playoffs and you want to sell it to the fans. To me, are the kids getting better? If the answer is yes, good season.
Where you judge this team on Stützle, Batherson, Norris, et cetera. That's how we should really judge this team this year.
So good catching up with you again, pal. You be well, Ian, and have an enjoyable weekend, my friend.
Yeah, you as well. I'll e-transfer you the $20 for the kind work.
Very good. Money well spent. Right. Thank you, sir. Ian Mendez from The Athletic covers the Ottawa Senators. Today, Brady Tkachuk named captain of the Sens, the 10th in the history of that franchise. Matty Marchese, our producer, that was a really eventful week. And even though we haven't talked about it today, and yesterday was all dominated by the Jack Eichel situation, we started off this week talking about Kyle Beach and his situation, and the negotiations have begun with the Chicago Blackhawks. We went through the Gary Bettman and Bill Daly press conference, the Mark Chipman, Kevin Cheveldayoff press conference as well. We were joined by some amazing speakers, and Katie Strang jumps to mind right away. And we had the Jack Eichel trade finally consummated, and we're heading into a full week of hockey. And we all, you know, gather around our televisions and our tablets on Saturday nights for Hockey Night in Canada. This has been one of the more newsworthy weeks that we've seen in quite some time here. And I want to thank you. I want to thank Lance for helping pull it all together. Excellent work, gentlemen. I want to thank our guests today, and that was Ian Mendez, who you just heard from The Athletic, Kelly McCrimmon, Vegas Golden Knights general manager, very generous with his time, Elliot Friedman, who kicked off the show as he does each and every day, and Dave Randorf, who maintains that his cell phone died. And although, like, I know Dorf, and he wouldn't lie about that, and I legit believe him, the story that I want to say is after we canceled on him for 2 days, he canceled on us. Well played, Dave Randorf. Well played. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for joining me this week. Back on Monday for more of the Jeff Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.